Wheat Beats Word is brought to you by TrueFlex Canola with Roundup Ready and Liberty Link Technologies.
Good day and welcome to Wheat Beats Word here on RealAgriculture.com for Wednesday, September the 15th. On this episode of The Word, holy hailstorms and even tornadoes in some areas. Unbelievable. Big bushels, baby. They just keep coming. Harvest heads up. Pay attention. And after all that, farmer rapid fire questions, as many as I can get to. And yes, I will probably run out of time yet again. Let's go. First off, oh my gosh, Mother Nature is simply not being motherly at all. We've had so many storms go through Ontario. Hailstorms, thunderstorms, high winds. They remind you of the derecho that went through the U.S. Midwest last year. Some weather stations recording wind speeds of over 125 kilometers an hour. All sorts of damage and even some tornadoes going through. It has been a week of absolutely wild weather. And what's really surprisingly is that there's been so many strips and so many repeated storms coming through doing damage. Really not at all what we want right at harvest. By the way, even the super dry people out in eastern Ontario finally have rain. Warren out in eastern Ontario saying he's up to 2 inches of rain after basically nothing all summer. And many people out there are saying, yeah, we like the rain. Please no hail. Please no tornadoes. And fortunately, they have not been getting them there, but it has definitely been harsh weather. Meanwhile, the little bit of harvest that has gotten done here and there and more yield reports coming in, unbelievable. So we now have several reports of edible beans breaking 40 hundredweight per acre. So that's 4,000 pounds per acre. That's unbelievable yields. Really excellent from that standpoint. Quality for the most part has been excellent as well. 30-ton corn silage. I mentioned we hadn't got to 30-ton corn silage. Well, guess what? Now we have hit 30-ton corn silage. And Perry asking an excellent question saying, hey, Peter, wait a minute. Wait. 30-ton corn silage, what does that mean? What's the moisture content? Because I had 25-ton corn silage, and it's about 60% moisture. So, Perry, that 30-ton yield is often 65% moisture. It just depends. We don't always look at that, and you're right. We absolutely should. It makes a huge difference. But nonetheless, 30-ton corn silage is just blow your mind good. It sort of suggests that those corn fields probably would yield somewhere in the 240, 250 bushel per acre range. And if we can get to that, that is really incredible. We often talk about 8 bushels per ton of corn silage, that relationship. It isn't always there, but that's kind of pretty cool from that standpoint. And one other quick note, just on the silo gas, once again, from Paul, talked about this last week, and alert, 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 because Perry says he put his silage into the silo. He just happens to have some laying hens down near the bottom of the chute of the silo, the way his barn and livestock are laid out, and filled the silo and came back in a few days later, and here is a bunch of dead hens at the bottom of the silo. Perry ran the blower for quite a while before he went up that silo chute. Pay attention. Be safe. Don't let silo gas hurt anybody. Meanwhile, on the maturity front, corn just continues to chug along way ahead of what anybody would expect given our heat accumulation. So we're still scratching our head. We'll have a good discussion about that at some point. But Dave Curry, an excellent agronomist, kind of in North Middlesex, North Lambton, that area, a 2950 corn heat unit hybrid planted the late part of April, black layered on September the 14th. So that is incredible that we can already have black layered corn mid-September. It just shows you how early that corn crop is. That's a really cool thing and a really good thing. But it prompts Brett to ask me, okay, Peter, so how quickly does this corn that's black layered dry down? And that's a really neat thing to think through. When corn black layers in mid-September, the temperatures are high enough that we actually get very rapid dry down. In the silage world, we talk about 0.5% of a whole plant per day. When we get corn black layered on September the 15th, if we get reasonable winds, low relative humidity, and 25 degrees Celsius temperatures, we can lose 0.7, 0.8, maybe even 1% in moisture per day. Now, it does also depend on the husk. If the husk is staying tight, we don't lose moisture nearly as quickly. If the husk is loosened off, the cob has turned down, the ear is facing down, that husk is brown and dead and loosened off so that the moisture can get out of it more easily. And if the kernel itself, the pericarp of the kernel, if it's not too waxy, the waxier the pericarp, the slower that moisture migration out of the kernel. If we get all the things to line up, 1% per day, I mean, that's very rare and very unusual. The average number actually is about 0.7% per day. If you look at the data from Bob Nielsen from Purdue University in Indiana State, it's about 0.7 this time of year. And as we move later, we get into October, we move more down into the 0.3, 0.4% per day. So it really is driven by relative humidity, and by the husk on the plant, and by temperature and wind speed. So if we could get all those things to line up, man, this corn crop, we could easily be taking 19% corn out of the field by the end of September if all things line up excellently. Meanwhile, just while I'm on that whole dry down scenario, talking to some edible bean growers who were harvesting before the rain happened and the beans got down to 15, maybe even 14.5%, now everything's high in moisture because pretty much everywhere has had that rainfall. Don't forget, if you wait for that crop to get down to 13% soybeans or 18% edibles because you don't want to pay drying, for every 1% that you are below the base moisture for your crop, if 13% is the base moisture for soybeans, you get to 12% in moisture, you have given up 1.1% in your weight or in your yield. If you get to 11%, then it's 2.2%. So that relationship is for every 1%, you lose 1.1% in yield, and that yield costs you. In fact, one grower I talked to this morning said, "Don't tell me that, because I had 3,900 pound edibles and they were at 15% moisture. And dang it, if I'd had that extra 3%, we would have broken 4,000 pounds. So don't forget, it's sometimes better to pay a little bit of drying and get paid for all the weight that you can rather than waiting for that crop to get down to that harvest moisture. Because once it hits 13%, next thing you know, it's often at 8%, and that's a lot of lost yield. Okay, going to move on and say, it's not all roses out there. Dang it. Kevin from Essex County saying, "Peter, what is going on in my corn crop? 2 weeks ago, we started to see, you know, the bottom three leaves. We had some tar spot on it. The plant was still alive. Now, 2 weeks later, the cob is like, it's 26% moisture. It hasn't black layered. It's actually brown layered. And that plant is dead from the bottom to the top. And it's just acting like premature death. So what we are seeing out there is a whole lot of this almost premature death syndrome. And as Kevin, in Essex County, we wonder if part of that was nitrogen deficiency, because your part of the world, particularly where you farm heavy clay soils, lots of rainfall all the way through the year, but particularly through that late June, July time frame, lots of denitrification, lots of nitrogen deficiency in that corn crop. Although I think, you know, you're a hog farmer, you would think if anybody could stand that, it would be someone with residual nitrogen out of that manure. But the premature death, we're seeing it lots of places. It could be nitrogen deficiency. In some areas, it's definitely drought. There's other areas that absolutely had too much dry weather. And then it could also be stock rot. So one of the other things that I think you have to start looking at is standability on this corn crop. And where these mini derechos, these super high wind tunnels went through the province, we already have corn that has a fair bit of lodging. But get out there into your corn fields and start doing the push test, because we are seeing stocks, particularly once we go south and west of London, down into that region where tar spot has become more of an issue. It's been wet all year. We're seeing more northern corn leaf blight. We're seeing more gray leaf spot. Albert Tenuta is also saying we're seeing lots of bacterial leaf streak in corn. And it's a bacteria disease, so the fungicides don't help with that. All of these things adding up to getting close to maturity. Not quite enough photosynthate. What does the corn plant do? It takes the photosynthate out of the stalks, out of the roots to finish the cob, and that hampers or compromises stalk integrity. Do that push test. Just fold an arm right up by your body, grab the stalk, just straighten your arm. If the corn stalk doesn't snap, you're in good shape. If it breaks off, particularly if it breaks off below the cob, you know that that's a bit of an issue. Do the push test and get that corn out of the field if you have a lodging problem. Okay, and I did mention tar spot. I want to just give a little more update on tar spot. In the area where we saw just the initial infections of tar spot last year, Albert Tenuta, you know, he was all excited. We had tar spot because he's a disease guy and it gives him something else to look at. Well, man, in those areas where Albert found tar spot in some of his plots and he grew corn on corn so that he knew he had that inoculum coming right from the soil, because tar spot does overwinter in Ontario. This is a disease year that happens to be at Rodney, where they've had all sorts of rain. So conditions, the environmental aspect of that disease triangle, perfect for the disease. We had the inoculum, we had the host, we have the environment. He saw the first tar spot on July the 2nd in those plots, and now those plants are entirely dead where they weren't sprayed with a fungicide. So I talked to Albert quite a bit, because now we're finding tar spot all the way to Dufferin County, Grey County, Bruce County. It's in every corn field that I've looked at in Huron County, Perth County, Middlesex. Like, it's just all over. It's pretty much looking like from Toronto south and west, we are going to have tar spot as a concern next year in the corn crop. And Albert says that it really comes down to your entire region and the spore load from your region. So what that says is that even if we grow corn after soybeans or corn after wheat from Toronto west next year, we're going to have to pay attention to tar spot, and almost as much impact on corn after wheat as on corn after corn. Not quite. It's always going to be worse from a rotation standpoint, but rotation doesn't likely save us on tar spot. So that is kind of a big mental note in the back of your head. Just on the soybean front, quickly, Ryan, having great conversation this morning with Ryan Benjamins, another excellent Lambton County agronomist. And Ryan saying to me, man, Peter, what is going on? I walk in soybean fields and there's all sorts of flat pods. What is causing those flat pods? And Chris Rollins, also part of that conversation, and Chris saying, you know, what was interesting in our tissue samples was that we had way higher sugar levels in the soybean and edible bean leaves that we did tissue tests on than we would normally expect through that August time frame. And apparently when you're under drought stress, you get high sugar levels in the leaf, but it's almost like those leaves can't translocate the sugar to the pods and to the seeds. And so we have lots of photosynthate, but it doesn't end up making yield. And we really wonder if that isn't what happened. We were super dry through August in much of that region, and we are seeing just random flat pods. The seeds just didn't develop. So that's another strike against the drought and a little bit of the reason why we may not set a soybean yield record. On the hail front, Mary saying, Peter, we got nailed so hard by hail. I'm going to have volunteer soybeans just like crazy. I'm going to plant winter wheat. How do I take the volunteer soybeans out of my winter wheat? Well, you know, Mary, what's really cool is that volunteer soybeans or volunteer edible beans. Peter Sikkema actually did a bunch of work with volunteer edible beans into a winter wheat crop, and they don't hurt the yield at all. There's been a little bit of work done with tillage radish, where if you seed tillage radish with the winter wheat, the thought process was that it would actually increase yields. Yeah, that didn't really work out, but in Peter Sikkema's work with those volunteer edible beans, there was no yield hit, and if anything, no statistical yield increase, but maybe a tendency for a bushel or two more winter wheat. And that could well be the fact that, yeah, you got nailed by hail, but all of those volunteer soybeans are actually going to bring some nitrogen to next year's wheat crop. So yeah, you didn't get the yield. At least there might be a residual nitrogen benefit. And it seems like some weed competition in the fall and winter wheat probably doesn't have any big impact. That's true with canola as well. Mike Kober did a little bit of work there, but Mike Kober does say, if you want to take them out, the product that's registered that we're quite sure will do the job is Infinity FX, or if they're up before you plant the soybeans, Aragon would do a good job. Both Lontrel and Pixero we think would be okay in the fall. They aren't labeled yet, but they're working on labels there. They would be excellent products. Lontrel, probably the best on the volunteer soybeans, but not quite labeled yet. Okay, I want to move on. Ken from Saskatchewan saying, oh, Peter, I got hailed out. My canola is 100% hailed out. My fertility program this year, 120 pounds of nitrogen, 40 pounds of phosphorus, 10 pounds of potash. What's left? What did I lose? What's left? Well, what you lost, Ken, was a whole bunch of money because the stinking white combine just came through and wiped out your canola crop. But the beauty of it is that virtually all of those nutrients are still there in the soil for next year, or if not for next year, for the subsequent crops. But in typical fashion, once they're in that organic form and not tied up in the soil complex, they become fairly rapidly available. And in Western Canada, you're not even going to leach much of that nitrogen out of the soil profile. So we would suggest that you're going to have the 40 of phosphorus is all there. The 10 of potash is all there. The 120 of nitrogen really comes down to when does that nitrogen release and what crop do you grow next year? If you analyze the amount of nitrogen in your canola crop, you probably have way more than 120 pounds of nitrogen in that canola crop. So residual nitrogen to next year's wheat crop or whatever you grow could be quite significant, just like the end credit that I talked about, the volunteer soybeans. And if you did get hit by hail here in Ontario, got a bunch of soybeans on the ground, yes, there is a nitrogen credit to those soybeans on the ground, to the wheat crop, or to the next year's corn crop. We simply don't know exactly what that is because we haven't done that work, but we do know that there is a bunch left. Ken also saying in that volunteer canola, in that hailed out canola, he seeded some fall rye. What about fall management? No more fall management needed once you've planted that rye crop, unless you have perennial or winter annual weeds, and then do some fall weed control. That's what you need to do. One last quick note from Aaron saying, I've got a run out hay field. I'm going to put it to corn next year, but man, if I could just get a little bit more hay off of it next spring, it would really help out my situation. What about seeding cereal rye into that run out alfalfa crop? The answer, Aaron, is absolutely. I've had lots of callers to the word system that do that every fall. They bump up that hay crop that they're going to take out with some cereal rye, hit it with a bunch of nitrogen, some sulfur next spring, and you can have an excellent hay crop that you cut off and then do a bit of tillage, plant it into corn. That simply works. On that note, that's it. That's all. On behalf of the team here at realagriculture.com, this is Wheat Pete with the word for Wednesday, September the 15th. Yep. Keep the questions coming. Keep the feedback coming. And I talk too long again. See you next week. Bye now.
Wheat Pete's Word is brought to you by TruFlex Canola with Roundup Ready and Liberty Link Technologies. Put two trade heavyweights in your corner to deliver a knockout blow to tough weeds.